Hey team, welcome to the Student Paramedic Podcast Research Mini-Series. Hey team, welcome back to the Student Paramedic Podcast and a very warm welcome to our very first episode of our research mini-series. On today's episode, we are going to be having a chat to one of the most enthusiastic and passionate people that I know about research, and that person is Dr. Sandy Macquarie. Sandy, you are a researcher, a paramedic, an educator. Your list of things that you've accomplished and done is absolutely endless, and we'll have an opportunity to talk about that throughout this mini-series. But I can't wait to dive into this mini-series with you. I'd like to break some of the barriers that people have getting into research, some of the ideas and the misconceptions that they may have that might be negative towards research, and how we can start to change sort of this culture around it. And so I'm really excited to have you on. I feel like this is going to be an absolutely amazing mini series. And so to get started, I think we should start with who you are, where you've, you know, started in paramedicine, and how you've gotten yourself into research, and how you're in a position now where you're able to help other people and get them interested into research as well.
Thanks for having me back. This is going to be a great series. And certainly needed. And yes, I am passionate about research. And I think underneath it all, I think if you can make research at least a little bit cool or cool sounding, you'll at least get that first step towards it, which is what was key for me. I'm from Canada, East Coast of Canada, and I've been a paramedic. This is my 31st year. And 31 years ago, when I took my initial, it was called EMT Level 1, there was no reference to research. There was no learning about best practice. There was no best practice. My final exam was, I had to say the words oxygen, blanket, and transport. And that was it. So it's certainly come a long way since then, but I'll kind of color in where I was in that respect. The text that we used was not evidence-based. It was a nice US-based textbook. But I was free to be a paramedic. Well, at that time, you weren't allowed to call yourself a paramedic. And that's what I wanted. I wanted to wear the belt with the radio and get the free coffee at Subway. That's what I wanted. And that's what I got. I actually did. And it was something about being a clinician. Now, you know, I was at the time what I would call the term is research agnostic. So that's not a religious term. That is, I didn't know research existed. I wouldn't have known where to find it. And I certainly didn't value it in kind of any way that would be useful or even way that we look at it today. So here I was fresh-faced out of EMT 1 school, and I was working ground ambulance, but I had a spark to be like I just wanted to chase the clinical rainbow as far as it would go. And in Eastern Canada, it was really hard to do the next level up, any kind of next level up. So I went to the U.S. I went to the U.S. and I took a course called EMT Intermediate, which is folks certainly in the U.S. would know that what that means, kind of the middle one. You learn to intubate and you learn some medications. But funnily enough, you know, I was handed whatever the medication list was, and I thought, well, that's, and I just accepted that there was evidence, good evidence to support intubating people, and did the skills. Went back and put some of it into practice, but I really had the bug to keep going as a clinician. Went back to the U.S. to do EMT paramedic, which again is the US term, but that's where I first, you know, became a paramedic. And so this is like mid-90s. Now I was starting to understand the scope of practice of these three levels. The fact that I had come from an area of Canada that had not yet embraced any of that scope really. And I thought, well, as I was going back and forth to Prince Edward Island for where, you know, where I lived, to Conway, New Hampshire, which was actually a pretty forward-thinking, very progressive paramedic program. It's taught by a guy by the name of Dave Tauber, who's still around. And they challenged me in my clinical skills, knowledge, and attributes. Not so much research, but those ones. So I was clinically, I think I was on point. and I wanted to put it into practice. And I immediately went back and I said, well, wait a second, I learned how to give aspirin as part of my paramedic training. So this is a true story. I went to the medical director of our service. Now, our service at that time was owned by a husband and wife, was private, had two frontline ambulances and two in the back that would do off-island transports. It was a very well-run service. And for the time that it operated, it was a good service. And they were good to me. So I went to the medical director one day and I said, you know, I really think that we should put aspirin on the trucks. It would be like the first medication. I think we should get and put aspirin, ASA, on the trucks for chest pain, for ACS. And he looked at me and he said, sure, Sandy, you go and find the evidence that it works in a pre-hospital setting and I'll support it. Now, I'll let that sink in. This was like, that was 1995. So I never went back. And this is like 2024. I was stumped. I walked out of there stunned because I couldn't do something that I wanted to do, number one. And when he said, go find studies that show best practice, you know, randomized controlled trials, like he went on, and I had no idea. I had no idea what to do. I wouldn't have known where to go. I would not have known what to do. So it's kind of a funny story in that it doesn't have a happy ending, or it does because they did get an aspirin in the end. But at that point in my career, I realize now, I was research agnostic. I didn't know how to read all the things that you led off with, you know, appraising evidence and how to break a research question down and how to appraise the quality of the paper. I couldn't do any of that. Could not do any of that. So we'll park that one for a while because I was continuing to run calls ground, and I got on a fixed wing air ambulance, AMBA air care, and took some more training. And I was having fun. And that took me to about 2000. I moved to Ottawa to be a flight paramedic on a helicopter in the year 2001. And I'd been teaching as well at a community college up until that point. So kind of splitting my time around, and went up to be a flight paramedic. And it was wonderful. And again, more training, but this time there was evidence supporting some of the guidelines, the clinical practice guidelines that we were given as flight paramedics. And I eventually ended up training to the level of critical care flight paramedic with a scope that was out of this world. But we were constantly drilled about best practice. And I was starting to become a consumer of research. So you think of yourself as research agnostic, that would have been me in 1993. Research consumer says, if I need to, I have to, I might be able to find the right source of information that might be credible. And that's where a lot of us are and remain as paramedics, along that continuum of not ignoring evidence, but not necessarily going out and designing a study. So I flew as a flight paramedic. I actually became chief flight paramedic for that company, Canadian Helicopters EMS, for the whole province of Ontario. Did that for 4 years. And really, I moved along the continuum, like in leaps and bounds, when I left the helicopter to work for the Ottawa Paramedic Service. I was their deputy chief logistics and program development. What was really cool there was I had the seat at the local base hospital on their research committee that came with the title. So now, whether I liked it or not, I was going to learn about research because I was the operational side of the research projects they were doing. So if they were checking, if they were at that time, ROC had just started Resuscitation Outcome Consortium, which is massive, still running. We got their studies up and running. Like we got the paramedics to do the work, and that was part of my job. Got on some papers, and I was inside the tent. Now I was still not ready to kind of go off on my own and become this research guru, but I started to understand, really started to understand how important research was, especially in clinical practice, especially. Did that for, I think, almost 3 years, moved back home, and I ran a big paramedic training company for MedEV EMS, which is a massive employer in Canada, for 5 years. At that point, I didn't have a lot of scope to do research, but I was always challenging the staff to say, the way you're teaching, is that best practice? What are we doing here? I landed on the shores of Australia in 2013, having left MedaV, and the thought of teaching paramedics was very appealing to me at that point. Plus, have you seen the weather? Hello, this is very nice. And they kind of waved under my nose. They said, yeah, and you can do a PhD too. And I thought, oh, okay, I'll do a PhD, or I'll enroll in one, and I won't finish it because I can't do that, but I'll tell everybody I'm in it, and I might get several years out of that. So I showed up, and I had a clinical question. Now I was starting to learn. A PhD is an apprenticeship into research. You have a supervisory team. You take one course, and it's, you know, this was called SCI 700, and the course had to yield a thesis where you answered questions and created new knowledge. So I started framing my research question, and a light bulb went on. It went off in my head, and it was, I was there. I tell this story a lot, and it is, I was an unwell paramedic from time to time. And I thought, if I can study what makes paramedics unwell as part of my PhD, then maybe I can help others. And you can start to see, as you know, I get passionate about research, but that's what I was passionate about. Now, I designed a course of study and did my studies and discovered a lot of new knowledge, and we kind of wrapped it up in a bow. And I realized at the end of, I was in a part-time program, when I finished my data collection, I was going to have to write this thesis, and that scared me, really scared me, because that's the pointy end, right? And I think I ended up, it was like 80,000 words, and it really hurt my head. It took me about a year to do it. But in the meantime, I was doing all those things that you talked about. I had to learn how to do research. It was my apprenticeship. I had to learn how to appraise the quality of research. I had to write papers. I had to be a peer reviewer, all those sorts of things. So by the time I got to 2019, I had graduated. And what the other thing that I had done along the same time was, with the students at the university, Charles Sturt University, I was lighting a fire of interest under them about research, but in a fun way. So we would do kind of cool things like explore, you know, I'd say, we're not going to give you any fluid in your trauma kit unless you can explain to me that it's useful. And they would get so mad. I do it every year. They get so mad, and they'd run away, and they'd come back, and they said, you can't do that. And I said, yeah, watch me. So they come back the next week, and they say, Sandy, kind of goes both ways here. And I'm going, perfect. So they presented, they did posters, they did articles. A group of five students taught us how to be better debriefers, and they won a national research award. And they started a paramedic research conference called Dare to Know Paramedics, which is still running. We started a research scholarship that didn't yield money. It yielded mentor time. So if you were a student, you could apply through the scholarship office and win 10 hours with an academic, and you could do a project. And that has been, it's still going. We won an award for that one. So the students were taking on these projects. These were non-accessible items, but yet they were doing them and more and more and more. And it was helping them not only find their way towards the profession of paramedicine, but they were taking these things to the job interviews with them, and they were sliding them across the desk. And I'm thinking, this is pretty good. So that continued. I had moved up to Griffith 5 years ago, and I taught in the Griffith Paramedicine program as a senior lecturer. And it was just carbon copy. Now, you crossed paths with me along that way, and you understood, or maybe you can put two and two together now and say, oh, that's how you work. And I try and make it the least little bit cool, because it can be so dry, you can hardly spit. But if you say, you know, I need an answer to this question because it's really puzzling me. Like, why do paramedics start so many dirty IVs, I would say, in trauma? And they would say, oh no, ours is clean. And I'll say, prove it to me. And off we'd go. So there was always like something just over the horizon. And that's been my journey from research agnostic to a consumer of research to a creator of research. And that last bit has been very rewarding because it's new knowledge. We've created new knowledge. And on the kind of get motivating paramedic students to do things, I did a paper on it with a colleague of mine, John Ray, and we explored how you get students to, I call it like a discretionary motivation, but how do you get them to do things, to want to do things that you're not getting a mark for? In fact, it's going to be a lot of work. And we published it in our Journal of Paramedicine. It's called Out of Alignment, how paramedic students take on non-assessable items. Very boring. But we broke it down as to, you know, how could we do that? And there's three kind of findings from it. I'll only tell you the first one. The first one is you have to suspend conventional disbelief. And I'll leave the other two for you. You can put the link in the show notes if you want. But that's a long, kind of long-winded explanation. But if you were to sum up, everybody listening to this podcast is somewhere on that continuum. And maybe by listening to this podcast and having a think about things and reflecting, they'll move a little bit more towards certainly a consumer of research to maybe a creative research. And that's the story I had been formulating in my head all day to tell you when we started recording this podcast.
That's really interesting. I really love the idea of research being considered as a continuum of agnostic, consumer, or creator. We really need people like yourself to build interest around research because paramedicine is still in its infancy. You know, when you look at medicine and nursing, they've got such strong foundations with research. And, you know, we're finding ourselves in a position where in paramedicine, there's a lot of people that are trying to challenge things that we're doing on road. Like you mentioned, the use of saline and trauma. So there's a great opportunity for paramedicine to really grow, but we need that interest to be sort of widespread through our community to really start creating change.
Yeah, and I've done it with coworkers. Coworkers have done it with me in terms of, you know, discovering something that needs to be investigated. With the students, it's always you need to be very supportive and you need to be able to understand that there's times that they may not be able to get to the whatever the finish line happens to be. But if we could count the number of articles and podcasts and student poster presentations, the last 2 years at ACP International Conference, the best poster went to our students.
That's incredible.
And that's in the General Assembly. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Shravan Chandramouli was this past year, and the year before was Tanisha Becton and Hannah Dumbledon. So they're holding their own weight, and at the same time, they hold me accountable. Because I remember at the same time, I had to develop supervisory skills without appearing to be a supervisor. And that's been hard. I've been, you know, what's the right mix of, you know, I'm not marking this. I've got four students in my office and they said, we'd really like to do something in research. And I said, well, why don't you start a student research day, which is Dare to Know Paramedics. And that's been running since 2016. Streamed every year. And they said, okay. And off they went and they did it. But at the same time, it was sparking interest amongst coworkers who some were way ahead of me in terms of research ability. Some were kind of the same level as me. And they were also embracing this. And there's always the ability to have an output, and it doesn't have to be a peer-reviewed article. In fact, it shouldn't be. That's hard. So I find part of my philosophy is to make it like the goal has to be like really achievable and you can see it, or you can paint the concept enough so that they can see it. And as I said, the group that did at that time, the Paramedic Research Conference, were able to envision it. And they presented to us as faculty. They said they wanted to do it. They organized it. They helped fundraise for it. And their legacy lives on. I've done other things. I've created a research award that stayed at Charles Sturt University, kind of honoring a friend of mine who I used to work with. And it's given out each year to students who do research. And it's just a nice recognition. So it comes around. I recently went over my list of publications, and I think I've encouraged more publications than I've actually kind of written or been first author on. So it's been very satisfying in that respect. But you're right. Now you've got the viewpoint of having just finished your undergraduate in paramedicine. Where, when you finished there, where would you think you would have been on that continuum?
I think at that stage, when I was leaving university, I probably would have been on the consumer stage of research, probably more so leaning towards still agnostic in a way, just due to the fact that I'd still gain some knowledge and some insight into research through university, and also through yourself and doing the podcast. But I don't think I'd fully understood or had a grasp on how important or kind of the role there was for research to have in paramedicine, and in particularly in my own practice. So I'd say mainly consumer, but not quite as probably far into it as I am now.
Yeah, and you come from a degree background, and of course Australia, the UK and South Africa train their paramedics in university as an entry to practice. So you have an advantage, but you would have taken a course called probably research methods or research methodology. How was that?
Yeah, so we did that subject at the end of our degree. I would have found it much more beneficial, I think, at the beginning of the degree. The thing that I struggle with quite a lot is actually critiquing evidence and seeing what's the most, you know, accurate and beneficial piece of evidence to use for assignments and practice and things like that. So that, I feel like, was a bit of a missed opportunity. In terms of enjoying it, I found it quite rushed, I guess, because university sometimes can feel a bit rushed at times with everything that's going on and doing multiple subjects at once. And I felt like I would have needed a little bit more time to really break it down. So I found the content quite interesting. But then equally, I found that the assignment was something that we didn't really get to choose in terms of the topic. So I feel like you mentioned at the start of the podcast as well, you did your PhD in health of paramedics. This is something you were really interested in. And I felt like, again, maybe a missed opportunity to sort of build that excitement and interest around students. We didn't get to really pick the topic that we had to do our literature review on. So another missed opportunity, but I think I could have enjoyed it a lot more.
Yeah, and I think we'll need to dive into that, if not in this episode, certainly in the next few that are coming up. And that is to trip into where you want to spend. I was literally on a treadmill one day watching a YouTube video on stats and thinking, well, I've arrived. I'm officially that person, but something got to me. And for me, it was, as I said, that passion that I could create new knowledge around how paramedics get sick. And that's exactly what I did. And that's probably one of the best things I've ever done, is that PhD and spread it far and wide. But you, whereas you have the advantage over almost every other paramedic trained, you know, paramedic student in the world, because it's there, it's a degree and it's got rigor and it's got reflection and it's got a research methods course, is still, if you look at kind of the very sparse statistics about how we fit against other professions with research ready people. And let's just take PhDs, for example. There's an informal registry in the UK of paramedic professional doctorates and PhDs. And if you take that plus people you know, plus actually Monash is studying it right now, there might be 300 paramedics in the world with PhDs. And when you think of that, you think, wow, you could put them in a very small room and close the door and then that's it for research. That's amazing, and they're split almost evenly between the UK and Australia. And whereas other countries still wrestle with their professional identity in terms of, do we need a degree or not? The US is a good example. There's probably a handful over there. So what does that mean? It means at the top of that pyramid, the ability to supervise, number one, supervise PhDs, masters, honors, and the ability to create new knowledge is limited. Further, the ability to sit at a table and say, we've got a research budget. I think these are the priorities. Although it's becoming easier, we weren't really present at the table. And I can remember as deputy chief in Ottawa, sitting at the research table thinking, if I open my mouth, I'm going to look really stupid. So I can say, having gone through the kind of all the stages, that we are comfortable and becoming more comfortable as a profession, sitting at the table, planning research agendas, and understanding that if we create new knowledge, we'll get to be a profession even faster than we are. And that raises another note, and that is, you know, how I define research. Research is anything to do with study of something. And we think of the go-to, which is clinical research. We need to see drug A is better than drug B. And that's great. It's perfect. But we also study our profession. We study ourselves. I studied the physiologic response of paramedics to an emergency call. And it runs the gamut, and we'll dive into all the terms, I'm sure, later. But research can be anything that you want it to be. And that's kind of the hardest thing for people to understand, is they can get to the point where they have a question or they have something they want to understand better, and they can actually do it. They tend to get lost in the, well, I don't want to do a randomized controlled trial. I don't want to do that. So that's important for us to know. So we're building like real horsepower to do research and to supervise and to teach in academia and author papers. And we're also understanding that the width of our things that we can study in paramedicine, and if you ever want to get on that site, all the thesis titles are listed, and it's everything from mine to qualitative research to clinical research to everything. So again, that's that mindset of as you move a little bit more away from research consumer towards research creator along that continuum, when you have that, I call it the aha moment, when you say, ah, I can study this thing, and maybe I'll just present it in a podcast, or maybe I'll do it as a poster, or maybe I'll just do it for my own information, and that's it. So yeah, what do you think of all that?
I think that's fantastic, Sandy. Every time I chat to you, I feel more and more energized, particularly around things like research. I remember not even wanting to do biomedical science when I finished high school because I didn't want to be in a lab doing research. But it's funny how I've come full circle, and now that's something that I'm really interested in. And you break it down into such easy sort of bite-sized pieces that make it seem so simple to get involved with. And I think that's what we really need. Like we mentioned before, you know, we need people to get interested and want to do things, and we need people like yourself to really be in those positions to encourage students and colleagues along the way to get involved. And so I feel like this is a really great sort of introduction into our mini series, because it seems like we are going to hopefully change some minds and attitudes. You are changing my own attitude around research, so I'm really excited. There's also a really exciting part of research, which you haven't touched on in your initial about yourself in terms of research, and that's you get to do some really exciting and cool things with your research. And you know what I'm talking about, and I would love for you to go into that a little bit more, just to show our listeners where this could take you. So it's up to you, but I'd love for you to share that.
Yeah, absolutely. So whereas I was kind of this sick paramedic who wanted to figure out maybe why I got sick, I'm not sure I ever found the answer to that question. But in studying the health of paramedics, it opened up this wide pathway, because everybody has one thing in common, they have health. So since that time, I'd honed in on a particular technology called biometric monitoring, where you wear a shirt that's got a whole bunch of wires in it. And it opened up the world to me. And since that time, let's say most specifically the last 5 years, not only have we studied paramedics and paramedic students and police officers and tactical police officers and stunt pilots and early childhood educators and pharmacists and academics and just about everybody under the sun you can put a shirt on, you can do a study on. It's not, you know, there's a lot more work to it than that. We were able to use some of my technology to do a stress study on Chris Hemsworth for the Disney show called Limitless, where he was in episode one, which is all about stress, and they wanted to show biometrics, like what was happening inside of him. So I was involved with that show, and I've been involved with a couple more shows since then, one of which I think is just about to come out. And it also opened up kind of that area of showing people. And you're right, I moved sideways a little bit to say, if we had these shirts and they accurately measured things like heart rate variability and you could explain it, would they be useful for people's health? And the answer is yes. So into those studies, we're starting to move into heart rate variability. I've done some work with some folks that do consulting and training in the area, stress and stress management. And I'm enthralled with the autonomic nervous system now and conscious control of it, heart rate variability, combinations of breathing and mindfulness, which we started 5 years ago with one of our honor students, and how far that can go. I think we're just at the very tip of the iceberg in terms of what lies beneath, in terms of how we can not get rid of stress, because we can't, but how we can either mitigate it or embrace it to the point where we can make it through those most stressful moments and or anxious moments and be productive as a paramedic or as an early childhood educator or as Chris Hemsworth, who got stressed, by the way, with some of the things that they made him do in the show. So, yeah, I will stay in that area. And I guess I'll segue for just a moment. I left academia last October and I started a company called the Edge Human Performance Group. And it's taking all of those skills, knowledge, and attributes that I'd learned in academia and packaged them up. And if you need help with learning and teaching or tutoring or but research design and execution is a big part of what I offer. And doing it in a way that is not, it's the least daunting possible. Research at the pointy end, when you're doing ethics and you're putting in big grants and you've got a research team, is hard work. It at that end, it's really hard work, very rewarding. The percentage of successful grants is actually quite low, so you have to do lots of them. But now with Edge, I offer myself up to say, if you need some help studying a new product or getting a grant across the line or things like that, or if you're a student that wants a little bit of help in the research methodology course to understand the concepts, I'm your person. And that's been very exciting for me these last kind of 6 months.
I'm going to put the link to your Edge Human Performance Group into the show notes so our listeners can get in touch with you throughout this mini series and afterwards about any questions they may have in this space. When we first spoke in terms of doing this mini series, you recommended that I read a particular textbook, and that textbook was Introducing Designing and Conducting Research for Paramedics. I bought it that afternoon and I'd been reading it ever since. And it's a great resource to go read more about the topics that we speak about in this podcast. And they do it in such an easy to follow, really simple way. And it's really intriguing all at the same time. So we really do recommend this resource. And we're incredibly lucky that Elsevier are giving away 5 of these textbooks with us in correlation to this mini series. So that's incredibly exciting. There are going to be details on how to get your hands on one of these textbooks on our Instagram page, which will be linked below in our show notes. So keep an eye out for that one.
Absolutely. And that it is an amazing textbook. I've got a copy as well. And to have it, well, it's written across from not an Australian viewpoint, but from the mature researchers that mostly reside in Australia. And they're just incredible. And I don't know if it would have made any difference in my continuum 30 years ago to have this in my hand, or that I would just set it down and head to Subway for my free coffee. But knowing that it's here now and it's so easy to read is such a big help. And you're right, the Elsevier folks who I've worked with on some of their other textbooks before are a great group, and they've given you the opportunity to share a few copies of that book.
Well, Sandy, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on for our very first episode of the Research mini-series. And it's been really cool hearing your insight and your journey as a paramedic and into research, because every time I talk to you, you're always really excited about getting other students on, all these other people that you are encouraging to get into research, on for the podcast and when we have discussions, which is incredibly admirable. But it's been awesome getting to know more about your experience, and I'm really looking forward to what the rest of this mini series has in store.
Yeah, it's very true. Yeah, I'm pleased to be able to tell you about my own research journey. I don't get to tell it too often. You're right, I hide behind others. I do. You know that. But so I gave it serious thought over the last few days about how I would present my own journey through research, and that's exactly how it went down, at least the way I remember it.
Well, team, there you have it, our very first episode of the research mini series, where we have learnt more about Dr. Sandy Macquarie, who's going to be helping us break down all things research in the coming episodes. On the next episode, Dr. Sandy Macquarie and I interview paramedic Abby Little on her experience going from paramedic student into her honours and now into her PhD. So we're really looking forward to that episode, and please let us know how you're finding this research mini-series via our social media and through our email linked below.